From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Trying to get a workable energy policy that lowers prices and lowers emissions has bedeviled the federal government. It's been an ideological flashpoint within the government, and it was pivotal in Malcolm Turnbull's losing his leadership. Now Scott Morrison is wrestling with the issue, which is more important than ever as the economy faces the challenges of COVID. Morrison has been much influenced by the chair of his COVID commission, Nev Power, and the commission's manufacturing working group to embrace what the Prime Minister now calls a gas-fired recovery. The plan's details were announced this week, and they include a threat that the government, through Snowy Hydro, which it owns, would itself build a gas-fired power station if the electricity sector does not agree to come up with a set amount of dispatchable power to replace the Liddell coal-fired power station that is due to close. The gas plan has come under criticism from the energy industry, from environmentalists, and even from a former coalition resources minister. The Minister for Energy and Emissions Reduction, Angus Taylor, joins us today to talk about the plan. Angus Taylor, why is the government putting so many, if not all, its eggs in the gas basket?
Well, we're not. This strategy and our approach to energy all along has been about balance, recognising that we need a range of different fuel sources and technology types for electricity and for manufacturing and industry. Gas is one where the potential hasn't been fully realised, partly because the gas markets in Australia haven't worked as well as they should. That's why we're bringing forward a whole series of reforms to address that. And partly because in the electricity grid, there hasn't been enough investment in dispatchable generation to balance the record levels of investment we're seeing in renewables, particularly in household solar.
Now, the government's been fighting with AGL for a long time over the future of the Liddell coal-fired power station, which is due to close in a couple of years. You're saying in the announcement this week that if the electricity sector doesn't produce 1,000 megawatts of dispatchable capacity, the government will use Snowy Hydro, which it owns, to build a gas plant. Firstly, doesn't this go quite counter to the Liberal Party's philosophy that it doesn't directly build enterprises, that it wants the private sector to do these things?
We do want the private sector to do it, Michelle, very much so. But if they don't, we also believe strongly in the importance of affordable, reliable energy. And so we'll step in if they don't. But we're making it very clear they've got till April next year. They've had many years to put together proposals. There are none committed. And so we're just being clear that we will step in if we have to, but we will only do it if we have to. It is a last resort, Michelle. Our focus is on good competitive markets. That's a Liberal Party philosophy. Our belief is in the importance of affordable, reliable energy. We want the private sector to deliver it. That's their obligation to their customers, we believe. But if they don't, we will step in.
Don't you think your base will be rather surprised at this sort of intervention or threatened intervention, however?
Well, our base is the quiet Australians, Michelle, and the quiet Australians want affordable, reliable energy. There's no question about that. For manufacturing, for jobs, for households, for making ends meet. And there's no time when that's more important than now, where we've had people at home more than ever paying more for increasing their usage of energy, and that's putting pressure on their bills and making it hard for them to make ends meet. So we believe this is the right time and it's appropriate that we should step in and avoid a repeat of what we saw in Victoria with the closure of Hazelwood, where we saw sharp increases in electricity prices because important capacity was not replaced.
The industry's been quite critical of this threat. It's said this week that it's likely to discourage investors rather than to encourage them. And you've set this April deadline for the industry to come up with investment plans. That's very tight. How do you respond to these industry criticisms?
Well, it's not tight. They've had years, Michelle. They've had years and they haven't committed. So it's as simple as that. But look, we're giving them another 7 months or so, and we would like them to commit. They've had many, many years. We've been very clear about this for a long time. We expect either life extension or like-for-like replacement. We're now saying we will do the replacement if they don't. We're serious. The only reason the industry could dislike replacing it is if they want to hike prices. Economics 101, you take out supply, don't replace it, the price goes up. We don't want the price to go up. It seems to me the AEC does want the price to go up from what they've been saying in the last 24 hours. It's disappointing that the energy companies have not learnt that delivering affordable, reliable energy is their number one obligation to their customers and to the country.
Is this amount of energy that you're saying must be delivered really more than is needed in the system, though?
No. The nameplate capacity of Liddell is over 1,500 megawatts. It's been running at an effective 1,000 megawatts. That's what's leaving the market, and that's what needs to be replaced.
Matt Canavan, who was in the resources job not so long ago, is critical of this plan for a gas-fired plant. He thinks that if you're going to go down this track, it should be a coal-fired plant. What is your response to your former ministerial colleague?
Well, I'd make 2 points. The first is coal will continue to play a crucial role in our system for many years to come because it's baseload, affordable power that is continuing to play a critical role for industry and aluminium smelters and others. And so it's not going away. The second point I'd make is this can be done quickly. And the great virtue of a gas generator in backing up and supporting the record levels of investment we're seeing in renewables is it can be done fast. And once built, it's flexible. It can be turned on and off as needed. When the sun goes down, it can be turned on quickly. When the sun comes up, it can be turned off quickly. And it's the right generation option for this particular problem.
So you're saying it's faster to get into production than a coal plant would be and it's more flexible, but is the emphasis on gas in general one way of walking quietly away from coal without being too conspicuous about it?
No. I mean, coal will continue to play a very significant role in our system for many years. Gas is important in electricity generation. It's also important as an industrial feedstock. It ensures we're all fed, Michelle. Gas is the critical feedstock for fertiliser, which is used for almost all cropping operations across Australia and across the world. We need more gas. It's a crucial fuel source. We're also investing heavily in hydro with Snowy 2, a massive project, the biggest renewable energy project in Australian history. Recent Australian history, and that too is a critical technology which can store energy. So these are all part of the mix. They will continue to be part of the mix alongside the record levels of investment in solar and wind, and that mix and getting it right is what delivers affordable, reliable energy with falling emissions.
What stage is the feasibility study into the possibility of a coal power station at Collingsville up to? Do you think this is ever going to happen?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the whole point of a feasibility study is to check feasibility. And so the funding has been committed and the work is proceeding. So we'll see how that proceeds over the coming months. But as I say, I mean, we need balance in our system, Michelle. That is the crucial point. Balance is the answer. Lots of people love to pick a single technology and say that is the answer to everything. The truth is, a balance has always worked for us. The balance will continue to work for us in the future.
When will that study be done?
Well, it's proceeding as quickly as possible. We would like it done in a relatively short period of time.
So we're talking months or?
Yeah, we're not talking years.
So we'd have a decision on whether that's all going to go ahead before the election?
No, I'm not going to speculate on a feasibility study I haven't seen yet. So we'll see what comes out from the feasibility study when it's done.
Just go back to Snowy Hydro. The business and the CEO of the company said it would operate as a commercial corporation, but bringing it into this gas policy, doesn't it suggest that really it's being used as a government instrument, a political instrument even?
No, because Snowy wants to do this project. I mean, Snowy has wanted to have more gas generation in its portfolio for some time. It has gas generation in its portfolio in the Hunter Valley now, and it would like more. It's a good fit with hydro, a very good fit with hydro, particularly as they invest in more pump hydro through Snowy 2. Snowy understands the power of balance in its fuel sources and technologies, and this is part of adding to that balance and establishing a commercial portfolio for Snowy, which is very attractive from an investment point of view, but also very, very good news for customers.
Now, while gas has less emissions than coal, it's still looked on warily by some, if not many, investors. Is there a risk that a new gas-fired power station becomes a stranded asset in the longer term? And would you be planning to sell this power station, if it's built, some years down the track, sell to private enterprise?
Well, I'll make a couple of points about that. The first is gas is going to be part of our system for many years to come because it's the perfect complement to renewables. Not my view. They are the words of the chief scientist. And the reason for that is that gas is flexible, as I said earlier, can turn on and off quickly, and you need that when you have solar and wind, which can turn on and off quickly without warning. So you need a flexible, dispatchable generation source to complement it. The second point I'd make is that over time, we'd expect that gas generators can transition to hydrogen generators. Currently, work is going on around the world, including with our customers in Japan on working through the best way to do that. There's technologies that already exist that can do that, and that would move what is currently a methane-based gas generator to a hydrogen-based generator with zero emissions. That is absolutely achievable, and we believe that the technologies are evolving to a point where that can be done relatively easily and quickly as the cost of hydrogen comes down. We've targeted the cost of hydrogen to come into line over time with the cost of methane, the cost of gas, natural gas. We think that's achievable. We're investing over $500 million to do it, and our gas generators will be able to be deployed in that way in the future.
Would you sell it?
It's not something we're even thinking about at the moment, Michelle. The focus at the moment is on getting through to April, seeing how much commitment there is from the private sector. We would very much like to see that commitment and then filling that gap.
Now, you say renewables are an essential part of the energy mix, but the government always seems to have a sceptical qualification when it talks about renewables rather than an enthusiasm for them. But aren't they clearly the way of the future?
Well, I'm enthusiastic. I was brought up in near Cooma, and my grandfather was the commissioner of the Snowy, what we'd call now the chief executive of the Snowy, when it was being built, the biggest renewables project in Australian history. So I've always been enormously enthusiastic about renewables. But I also see that what we need is a mix. And when people talk about a single technology as the answer to all our problems, I am sceptical. I'm not sceptical of balance and having a range of different technologies. That balance will change over time, and it should. But it's having that balance that's right, and a balance that includes hydro, solar and wind, gas, coal, batteries starting to play a role, particularly over the very short term to help support, secure the market. All of those technologies are playing roles, and they will continue to for many years to come, Michelle.
And just finally, what impact will your gas plan have on Australia's emissions reduction trajectory? And is this just the first step in the government's recalibrated energy policy? Will we get more announcements soon?
Well, in terms of emissions reduction, this is good news. I mean, We have projections that we do each year going out to 2030, and this is absolutely consistent with meeting our 2030 targets. So we can meet and beat those targets with this project as being part of it. And of course, it's important to remember that gas is the perfect complement to renewables. So it allows you to reduce emissions, not just because the gas is lower emissions to alternatives, but because it's the complement to renewables. In terms of other emission reduction strategies, absolutely. We've already put out the draft technology investment roadmap. Our focus is on technology, not taxes. That's a good liberal belief that progress is best made through the deployment and enterprise of entrepreneurs and technology. And we're convinced that that is not only the way Australia will reduce its emissions in the coming years without damaging our economy, whilst maintaining a strong economy, it's also the way the world will reduce its emissions whilst maintaining strong economies. The developing world will embrace lower emissions technologies when the economics work for them. And we're convinced that focusing on technology and improving technologies like hydrogen, carbon capture and others alongside that soil sequestration can have the impact we need to reduce not just Australia's emissions but global emissions as well.
So more energy announcements this year?
Well, there's always more energy announcements, Michelle. There's always more energy announcements because it is an area where there's enormous focus, and there needs to be, and we'll continue to drive those critical reforms that deliver affordable, reliable energy as we bring our emissions down.
Angus Taylor, thank you for talking with us today on a busy media day for you. That's all from today's Conversation Politics podcast. We'll be back with another interview soon. Thank you to my producer, Tom Glassie. Goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.